Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. Let's first look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. About Annie Leibovitz, the famous photographer, she is the photographer of stars, but is facing ruin. Annie Leibovitz is as famous as the people she photographs, but now the genius behind the lens is close to financial ruin, a victim, some say, of her own relentless artistic ambition. Among the qualities making Leibovitz 59 the most sought-after portrait photographer in the world are legendary perfectionism and the pouring of resources into lavish sets. Over the course of her long career, nothing has been too extreme in Leibovitz's pursuit of the perfect picture. She put former action icon and current California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger on top of a mountain, submerged black actress Whoopi Goldberg in a bath of milk, and closed France's Versailles Palace to shoot Kirsten Dunst posing as Marie Antoinette. Circus animals, fire, airplanes. She was rarely denied a requested prop, however seemingly outrageous. That kind of imagination and the stylized, hyper-realistic portraits she produced had a long line of celebrities, from Hollywood stars to Britain's Queen Elizabeth II, beating a path to Leibovitz's door. Yet behind a facade of unlimited financial means, Leibovitz was spending her way into a nightmare. In what now appears as a disastrous decision to raise funds, Leibovitz took a $24 million loan from Art Capital Group, ACG, in effect a high-end pawnbroker, in December 2008, using her own photographs as collateral. That debt is due September 8th, and if she can't pay up, she could lose her life's work. ACG, which specializes in making loans to owners of high-value artworks, is unlikely to adopt a soft line. Leibovitz must comply with the sales agreement she signed, authorizing Art Capital to sell the fine art and real estate assets and to pay the invoices that are due, ACG spokesman Monteith Illingsworth said in a statement. The overleveraged photographer not only risks losing her photo archives, which the New York Times estimates could be worth $50 million, but also her house in the trendy Greenwich Village district of Manhattan and a second home outside the city. If she is forced to declare bankruptcy, it will then be up to the courts to decide how to distribute the assets. Banking giant Goldman Sachs entered the fray this week with a claim to own part of Leibovitz's debt. ACG disputes that, but says Goldman Sachs could be invited to bid for the loan. Leibovitz's career has few parallels. Her famous shoots include a nude portrait of John Lennon and Yoko Ono just before the Beatle was murdered, and nude and pregnant actress Demi Moore. Despite moving in such glamorous circles, Leibovitz has never been known for having a knack for finance. When she was hired to shoot ads for American Express in the 1980s, it emerged she had been previously turned down by the company when applying for a credit card. New York's chattering classes are aghast at the renowned photographer's downfall, making her the latest spectacular victim of the bad debt crisis and nationwide recession. The weekly New York Magazine published a lengthy article recounting her perfectionism at work and her lavish personal taste, including an apartment on the banks of the Seine in Paris to please her friend, writer Susan Sontag, who died in 2004. Anna Wintour, the equally famous editor of Vogue magazine, said in a documentary that Leibovitz was priceless. Budget is not something that enters into her consciousness, but it is worth it because at the end of the day, she gives you an image that nobody else can, said Wintour. And for those of you who are having trouble with your mortgages, there are more traps that banks are imposing. For example, traps snare hurting Lee County homeowners in Florida. Advocates for people delinquent on their mortgages say banks often gouge them by replacing lapsed insurance with a more expensive product, sometimes forcing homeowners into foreclosure itself. The practice called forced placed insurance is legally required for lenders to impose in order to protect the value of their investment. April Charney of Jacksonville Legal Aid, an expert in foreclosure issues, calls it a hugely predatory practice in which lenders often provide overpriced policies at inflated prices, cutting sweetheart deals with sister companies or favored business partners. The result, she said, is borrowers find themselves falling even farther behind. They often go into foreclosure and end up losing their homes. Lee County has consistently been in the top five worst foreclosure markets in the country for the past year. About 20,000 foreclosures are working their way through the county's court system. But bankers and insurance executives say the practice is necessary to protect the lender and costs more because there's more risk. We don't have the luxury of shopping insurance policies, said Bank of America spokeswoman Jumana Bowens. We don't want to do it. It's not something we're doing on the front end. Without knowledge of features such as smoke detectors, the lender can't negotiate a better rate, Bowens said. As a result, it's unusually higher than market rate. To some extent, the problem is exotic loans made to marginal borrowers, often without including insurance or taxes in the mortgage payment, as it commonly is for standard mortgages, said Eddie Felton, executive director of the Home Ownership Resource Center. The center is a private, nonprofit, Fort Myers-based agency that helps people who are behind on payments. The insurance is always going to be three or four times as much as you've been able to negotiate, he said, causing some borrowers to fall even further behind. But John Belisle, senior vice president of Fort Myers-based insurance company Oswald Tripp, said that's because a delinquent borrower means the property is statistically at greater risk. Most of the time, these are vacant properties, he said. A lot of them have been broken into, vandalized, air conditioning systems are stolen, or the house is gutted of copper. It's especially expensive to obtain insurance on such property in Southwest Florida in the summer when carriers face the added danger of storm damage, he said. Sometimes, however, those higher rates can have unexpected consequences, advocates say. Even in death, Marie Connolly couldn't escape the doubling of her homeowner's insurance when her estate couldn't pay the mortgage she held at a modest South Fort Myers condominium. Connolly, 81, a retired health planner, died in June 2008, and a few months later, there was $89,000 owed on a reverse mortgage credit line on her Terra Verde condominium off Island Park Road, said friend and executor Barbara Franz. A few months later, with the estate unable to sell the condo for enough to satisfy the Federal Housing Administration-backed loans, the Bank of America replaced Connolly's $2,000 a year policy with one costing twice as much, Franz said. The bank doesn't comment on individual cases, Bowens said. Charney said she's seeing more judges expressing rage about bad forced-placed insurance policies and noted a class-action lawsuit was filed recently in Boston to clean up the business. Franz said she still gets a statement every month from Bank of America saying how much is owed on Connolly's condo. It's up to about $110,000, she said. The bank still hasn't filed a foreclosure on the condo, which is now worth less than half the $186,000 it was assessed for in 2006 when Connolly got the mortgage, Franz said. Meanwhile, the condo sits vacant, and Franz is unable to sell it for what's owed, caused in part by the steadily accruing insurance payments. Charney said cases such as Connolly's show the system needs to be changed to help borrowers keep their insurance or get it replaced for a more reasonable amount. Nobody's looking at the bigger picture, Charney said. They're not seeing the borrowers just going to bail out the mortgage. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now let's move on to the second segment of the show to get some practical advice about your debt situation. First, I'd like to start with an important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. And I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. Also, in this show, a lot of the information most productively builds from one show to the next, much in the way a course builds. So you can go back and listen to the shows by going to the archives at www.kruufm.com. Look in the Life and Debt section and you can listen to past shows to get a complete understanding of how to deal with your debt and also your budget to prevent debt in the future and to build some financial stability for yourself. I've gone through a lot of the different challenges regarding debt. And in the last couple of weeks, I've actually been talking about bankruptcy for consumers, in particular Chapter 7, which is a straight liquidation bankruptcy, and Chapter 13, which is a repayment plan kind of bankruptcy, and also a bankruptcy which, under the right conditions, can help a person to catch up on their past mortgage payments or car payments. Just a short recap by way of comparison between a Chapter 7 in a Chapter 13, a Chapter 7 erases most of the consumer debts, whereas a Chapter 13 gives extra time to repay debts. In a Chapter 7, almost all consumer debts, such as credit cards, medical bills, payday loans, back payments on rent, utilities, cell phone, etc., are erased in a relatively short period of time, whereas in a Chapter 13, there is a postponement of the debts being erased until after you actually complete your repayment plan, which can be 3 to 5 years. And then the debts are erased to the extent, of course, that they're not repaid. In both a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 13, there are a number of debts that generally never get erased, such as child support and alimony. Taxes, in particular those that are within the last 3 years, student loans, mortgages, unless of course you give up your home, car payments, again unless of course you give up your car, and some other kind of specific debts that neither a Chapter 7 nor a Chapter 13 can get rid of. So of course you need to speak to a specialist to find out, because there are also some differences between a Chapter 13 and a Chapter 7 under the new law for some specialized areas of debt. The biggest advantage for a Chapter 7 is that it erases most consumer debts quickly, so you can get a fresh start in a few months. And one of the biggest advantages of a Chapter 13 nowadays is that you can get some time to catch up on your past mortgage payments. And finally, in comparison, in a Chapter 7, you don't really get the time by law to catch up on your mortgage payment if you are in arrears, so you could lose your home. And finally, one of the biggest drawbacks in a Chapter 13 is it is challenging for many people. And unfortunately, trying to make the payments for 3 to 5 years, the debtor is not successful, so the plan fails. But the important thing to remember here is that bankruptcy can be very useful to many people who are in an extreme debt pressurized situation, but it's not generally something that people can figure out on their own. If you come to the conclusion that you think bankruptcy is your best option, you really should start by hiring an attorney. In theory, you can go alone, which under the law is called pro se filing, or you can use a filing service. First, recognize that filing services cannot provide legal advice, even though they often charge as much as a lawyer. And whether we're talking about a filing service or you're going it alone, the laws have, as Professor Warren says, a zillion unexpected traps in them, so you are much safer to hire an attorney. Unfortunately, the best attorneys don't usually carry a magic wand. According to Professor Warren, however, there is a good way to distinguish a good bankruptcy attorney. She says, look for a specialist. Stay away from small outfits that advertise bankruptcy along with divorce, immigration, car accidents, and a bunch of other stuff. Professor Warren emphasizes that you should look for someone who does a lot of bankruptcy work and not much of anything else. You can call your county bar or state bar association for a referral or check the yellow pages. Now, once you have chosen a bankruptcy attorney, there's a lot of preparation under the new law in particular for your case, a lot of paperwork, a lot of documents that have to be turned over, and a lot of form questions that have to be answered. Essentially, what do you own? When did you get it? How much debt do you owe? Whom do you pay? What is your income? What kind of transfers have you made in the last couple of years? In short, the list goes on, and it really absolutely requires complete disclosure. You need to save your bills, your statements, your mortgage papers, and all your other financial papers, and whatever else your attorney is requesting. It may be tedious, but the paperwork is important. And you should recognize clearly that these aren't just a bunch of papers filed away where no one ever reads them. The attorney has a due diligence responsibility, particularly under the new law, to go over everything with you in detail in answering the demands of the petitions and the schedules in the petitions. Of course, this is quite possible to do everything, but it does take some organization and time, and of course, a specialist who will ask you the right questions. Once the petition and forms are completed, you must sign those forms under penalty of perjury, just like testifying in court. So you want to get the answers exactly right. Now, once your paperwork is done and you have signed your petition and schedules, your attorney will file the papers for you at the right time, which gives you the maximum benefits under the law. And believe it or not, that can vary for you personally from circumstances like whether checks have cleared in your checking account yet or not, or whether you are waiting on a tax refund or have already received it. So the time is set and then your attorney files it for you. In most places around the country now, this is all electronic, done by computer. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, getting back to the actual filing of the bankruptcy paperwork, once it is filed, the relief is immediate. Once the papers are filed with the court, all efforts to collect from you, telephone calls, car repossessions, mortgage foreclosures, wage garnishment, all have to stop by federal court order. Both your attorney and the notification system will make sure that every creditor is notified about the bankruptcy, and you can always call your lawyer if anyone tries to hassle you after the filing. Usually within the week, you will get a notice in the mail to appear at a meeting with a bankruptcy trustee. Now, essentially, there are five different people or institutions involved in the bankruptcy. There's you, there is the creditors, there are two kinds of trustees, one called the standing trustee, and the other is a U.S. trustee or an assistant U.S. trustee, and then the fifth is a judge. In most cases, the judge is just there in the background, someone you will never see or talk to. Your hearing is in front of one of the trustees. It's called a 341 hearing, and sometimes called a meeting of creditors. And that meeting is in front of, as I mentioned, a trustee, and that's the standing trustee. Even though it's called a meeting of creditors, in almost all cases, creditors never show up. If they have a problem or an objection, there are other kinds of procedures for them to make those objections or statements aside from the meeting in front of the standing trustee. As I mentioned too, there is another kind of trustee, the assistant U.S. trustee. The assistant U.S. trustee is a regional representative looking for very specific kinds of broad issues regarding bankruptcies, random audits, whether a case really belongs in a Chapter 13 rather than a Chapter 7, trying people for fraud, and such things where they are really, in a way, in the background, overseeing what is going on. Whereas your hearing is in front of the standing trustee. So you have received this notice of meeting of creditors or 341 meeting in the mail within the week after you have filed. And it's usually about 4 to 5 weeks after you have filed that the meeting takes place. You and your lawyer will show up, typically at an office building near the courthouse, believe it or not. Court time in and of itself is usually reserved for very serious problems, and most bankruptcy cases are handled as routine affairs, despite the fear and anxiety that most people have. The usual gathering place is a big hallway where lots of people are milling around, wives looking for husbands who are parking the car, mothers trying to quiet crying babies, and people glancing furtively as everyone else who showed up on the same day is milling around feeling somewhat distressed and lost. Lawyers are generally talking to their clients, trying to help them to relieve the distress and inform them and prepare them for the hearing. The hearing room itself is generally filled with the cases that are going to take place during that hour in front of the trustee, people waiting for their case to be called. When your name is called, you and your attorney will go in front of the trustee, who is also usually a lawyer who has been appointed by the judge to review your case. You will be required generally to show some photo ID and your social security number, and then you are sworn in, promising to tell the truth, and the trustee will make a number of comments, including general and standard legal points about the debtor's responsibilities, duties, and what would happen if these are violated. The trustee will, after swearing you in, start asking very standard questions. And you should also note that all of this will be taped on a recorder. Now, for most people, the questions are fairly routine regarding the petition, your assets, leaving anything out, etc. Creditors can show up and ask questions, but most of the time, this never happens. Now, if something unusual happens in your responses to the questions from the trustee, then over time, beyond the hearing date, more examinations can take place. But if you are like about 99% of the cases, when the questions are over, the trustee will recommend to the court that you receive a discharge of your debts. Now, depending on what state your case is filed in, the way the trustee handles the matter is variable. Also, depending on the complexity of your asset situation, the amount of time the hearing can take is anywhere from a couple of minutes to 10 or 15 minutes in the rare, unusual situation, again, depending upon the state that you live in. Now, in the normal situation where you will just naturally receive a discharge, that will happen in a document from the court's order after approximately 60 days. But again, this does vary depending on the state and jurisdiction and local rules involving your case. But once you have that discharge document, you can show it to any creditor who continues to bother you, and that's actually a violation of the law if they are continuing to try to collect that debt. For most people, the vast majority of their assets are exempt, and they have what is called a no-asset case. So once you have your discharge, the case is generally closed very quickly thereafter. However, if you are in a situation where you do have some non-exempt assets which need to be liquidated, or there is a creditor who is coming forward after your hearing and filing some objection, again, which is somewhat statistically unusual, you generally still receive your discharge of the debts, but the case remains open to deal with these other issues. So, for example, if there are assets that need to be liquidated, the trustee will start a process to have that happen and send out requests for proofs of claim to the unsecured creditors so they can get a piece of that liquidated asset which goes into your estate. Generally, you have very little to do with this, and it all takes place separately from your involvement in any substantial way. Again, that's only in an asset or a contested case. That is a case with some contested issues in it, which, as I want to emphasize, are very infrequent. For Chapter 7 in particular, most people are amazed at how fast it all is. Others remark that the people were handled in a very respectful way by the trustee in general. Yet, for most people, it won't feel like a stress-free situation. Even when there are no tears, most people cannot feel comfortable, make eye contact, or ignore the distress that they feel. In fact, this is a moment when people feel some sense of financial failure and can be a painful time for those people. That's why it's really important to hook up with a professional specialist attorney who can, along with his staff, help you to understand what is going to happen and to be kind and compassionate in ways that will directly help you to relieve the stress that is naturally associated with this kind of ordeal in your life. As we've said many times in the past, this isn't just about money, it's about your health, and that includes your mental and physical health and the relationships that are affected by you and the stress that you are experiencing. So it is very important to have a proper and balanced understanding of what is going on and how to deal with it in ways which will substantially reduce the stress that is associated with the process. If rather than a Chapter 7, you have filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy after the 341 hearing, then the plan that was prepared by you and your attorney is set forth before the court for confirmation, a form of proper acceptance, which is reviewed by the creditors who can and often do object to various points of it. So this is a process which can take some time to get finalized and confirmed, depending on the circumstances you are in. There is a lot of variance in this kind of situation, and it is really beyond the scope of a show like this to discuss it. You need to have a specialist to help you. And in the future, I will bring out some more points on the Chapter 13 process. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous